And the recording is in progress. And I have not spoken yet today because it is 7 in the morning. So this is my first time speaking. So hello. Yes, I was lucky enough to meet Bridget in like a sort of offshoot book study book club thing with some other cool people from that we met online in Zoom recovery because I got sober about 2 weeks before the 2020 election, which was a really interesting time to I'm based in New York City. I grew up in the Midwest, so I'm from the US. It was an interesting time to choose to get sober, but I'd finally had enough, and so the chips fall where they may, and that was the time for me. I don't feel like there's maybe a couple people here who know my story, so I'm gonna do a I'll try not to do like a drunkalogue, but the basics of it. So the more that I think back on it, the more that I know that I've had an unhealthy relationship with alcohol my entire life. I didn't have alcoholic parents. I have one older brother. He didn't have an issue. He didn't do anything social in like growing up. He didn't, he partied a little bit in college, but like just a little bit. So I didn't have any like role models for that, except for like film and TV, which I sort of believed a lot of stuff that I saw on film and TV was like true. And I'll get into that in a minute. But so I didn't have any like role models that exemplified heavy drinking or anything like that, but I always was fascinated by it. My mom's side of the family is very big, and we know them very well, and we would have these big Christmases together at the farm, and it would be like, all the adults would be drinking their wine at the table, and we would have our like grape juice in the little tiny wine glasses, and I was like, I want the wine because that something about that just seems more interesting. Like I was just always drawn to that. I remember I was doing a like a chill Who've Discovered America pageant thing in elementary school, and I was Leif Erikson because I have like Nordic roots, and I was like, oh, I want to be like the Scandinavian guy. And I asked my dad if he thought it would be inappropriate if I had a hip flask on me. I think I was 9, and he was like, yeah, I think that would be inappropriate. And I don't even know how you know what a hip flask is. So I just was always really interested in it. And I also was pretty unpopular, and I still to this, I mean, not as actually much anymore, but for a long time, it was really important to me to be liked by people. I think maybe that's because I wasn't. And so it seemed like that sort of external validation would provide happiness. And I wasn't like an unhappy kid, but I was a little anxious and I was a little sad. I'm an artist, so it's like, we got moods and stuff, and I think I thought I was, I wanted to be accepted. I wanted to be surrounded by laughter and good times and things like that. And I feel like I thought that alcohol could be a way into that by the time I got into like middle school and high school. And so, I wasn't cool. I was also deeply anorexic, so I was like sick and like cold all the time. But by the time I sort of started getting better in that regard, and coming out of my shell a little bit and doing theater, I, met some kind of other kind of crazy fun theatery people, and we would go like hang out in the park and drink at night and do little things like that. And I kind of made it a mission to surround myself in environments where there was booze as much as I could. There was like a decent amount of partying at my high school. I think the same as kind of anywhere. I was not invited to much of them, but I went when I possibly could. So it wasn't like I was going out and getting fucked up every weekend, but I did try to access it as often as possible. And I was, I managed to, I'm sure I got drunk a couple times a year, a few times a year, maybe a handful. I don't know anymore. I don't know. But I was still doing great at school. I was having more friends now than I had before. I was doing really well in the theater program. I started to really love it. And, people were telling me I was good at this thing. And I was like, wait, really? I just kind of thought this was fun. But everyone's like, no, you're really good at this. And I was like, okay, well, I think I want to do that for college because I don't want to do any more studying. I like school. I like to learn, and I still do like to learn, but I was done. And so I was like, you know, I think if I'm going to continue, I don't know what I want to do next, but doing theater seems like the most fun option. So I auditioned for schools and I got into a school that I really wanted to go to, and I got like a scholarship, and it was great. And I went to the school and I was doing theater, and it was a drinking culture. Like, this is where the hard-hitting drinking really started. Not everybody did, but most of us drank often. There was like some sort of a theme, and this was in the theater program, right? Like, the theater kids freaking partied, and that's something that is kind of universal in a lot of places. Like, we know how to get down, and there's like the different, like, you know, there's the backstage folks, and there's the onstage folks, and there's the management people, and everybody has their own kind of vibe, but like, we all come together and we get fucked up. And I was having a lot of fun doing that, but I was also drinking a lot of like shitty vodka really quickly and vomiting often as a freshman. And I didn't like that because I wanted to stay up and party with the big folks. So my goal became to be able to drink sort of as much as possible and still like stay awake and stay up. And so, like, a little bit of a tolerance built, right? And, you know, I was having like fun, flirty things with people, and I got a boyfriend, and I was having friends, and I was also still being cast really well. And I was getting straight A's, everything was great. And then when I was in we did like a study abroad thing in like kind of like, if you had money to travel, like everybody went, because you would just sort of like transfer your credits over to this campus basically that they had in England. It sounds fancy, it kind of really wasn't. But we, so a lot of us would do that. And I went there, and it was the spring of my sophomore year of college, and someone was talking about Adderall. And I'd never done, I mean, I'd smoked weed. I never really liked weed, but it was something, again, that like in high school, I could like bond with people over smoking weed. It was easier to get than booze. So like, weed was part of my story, even though I really was never a huge fan of it. I didn't like that it made my eyes feel tired. I wanted to feel like awake. That's still something to this day that like, I like to feel up. So someone mentioned Adderall, and I was sort of like a little nervous about it, but it was this guy that I kind of really liked, and we were having a really good time. And he was like, I was like, don't you, isn't that like a study thing? Or like people with ADHD? And he was like, yeah, but if you like snort it, it kind of gives you this like fun tingly feeling, and you kind of can like stay up or whatever. I was like, okay, let's do it. So we bought some Adderall from someone that was on that campus, and we snorted it. We crushed it up and we snorted it, and we went out that night, and it was the best night of my life. And I said, I found the answer to everything. Now, I'd slowly been finding the answer to everything with booze, but like this was just such a fast-tracked experience, and it stands out so acutely in my mind that night. Like, I wasn't, it was, you know, March in England. I was wearing like a little skirt and I didn't feel cold, and I was smoking cigarettes like nobody's business, and I felt so cool, like leaning against the wall of a building smoking a cigarette, like drinking a beer with these like cool older guys. It just felt like, and I stayed up till the sun rose and everything was amazing. And then the next day I felt like fucking hell. And the first thought I had was, well, how do I get more of that? Because that'll make me feel better. So I felt pretty addicted to that immediately. And by the time I got back to regular school in the fall, I developed a pretty consistent drinking pattern, and I was also really itching to get some more Adderall. And I'd come out here to do like a clown thing that summer, and like a clown class workshop thing. And so, and I'd met someone who did cocaine, and so I dabbled in a little bit of cocaine that summer. I was really itching for the Adderall. Get back to college, and I nosedive into anyone on campus that has it. I was buying and stealing Vyvanse. I was buying and stealing Adderall. At one point, I bought out all of the available Adderall on that the theater program knew about. I had bought all of it, and it came time for like finals week, and everyone was like, "Sarah, we would really like some study drugs, and you have bought it all, so fuck you." I was not doing well with my friends at this point. I was really moody. I was not sleeping. I was still getting straight A's. I was still getting cast well, but my personal life was completely falling apart. I was like, I was like having some crazy kind of like thoughts and visions in my head about like what was reality, like because I wasn't sleeping. I was also relapsing into eating disorder, because it's kind of addictive that the stimulants don't want to make you eat. So I was losing a lot of weight. Everything was crumbling down. And I decided, and I was, but it was everyone else's problem, right? So then I moved to New York to, after graduation, moved to New York to become an actress. But really, I just wanted to be able to drink and do drugs the way that I wanted to drink and do drugs. By this point, my mother had been diagnosed with cancer, and I sort of like wasn't letting that affect me. I was like, you know what? I don't like it, but I don't really want to think about it. I don't really know what's going to happen with it, even though it was definitely a fatal diagnosis. I didn't like really allow myself to go there. I was just like, that's not a problem I can deal with. The problem is, how do I get more booze? And how do I get Adderall now that I'm in New York City and not on a college campus? How am I supposed to do that? Because these are the things that are really important to me, is like, I just need to drink and get fucked up in peace. Everyone else is just too much of a problem for me. And luckily enough, when you're in New York City as a, 22-year-old living in Bushwick, you can find a lot of coke. So I started doing that. And my mother had been very like generous and had sort of set us up for success. My brother was going to be a cellist, and so like she basically there was like money that she had a lot like put aside for me to like use to like start my career as an actor in New York City. And I blew through all of that in, I don't know, 6 months to in doing coke. Wasn't calling her, wasn't going home. Like we would exchange a cold email now and again. I barely talked to her. And when I would go home, I would like try to find as many drugs as I could. I was like, go sneaking out to buy liquor and like hiding in my room. It was horrifying. And I was really unhappy. And my relationship at the time had disintegrated. I was having a lot of casual sex, which turned out to be pretty unsafe for a lot of various reasons. I was losing jobs. I was not doing well with my roommates. And again, it was everyone else's problem. So things kind of went like that for a while. My mom died. I didn't stick around for the funeral. I mean, I went to the funeral. I went to there for when she did die. I was fucked up in the room when she died, and I chose to exit the situation, I think the day after the funeral. I didn't want to be a part of the whole situation. So my dad was just there to deal with it. It would not have been a good idea if I was there. They found me all fucked up and high. He asked me if I was high. I said, no, I just wasn't sleeping. Clearly a lie. Lots of screaming. So I get back to New York and things just sort of go in a similar way for a while. But then the relationship that I'm in at that point, which is someone that I'm drinking and using with a lot, was again, like we were fighting. It was pretty bad, nothing physical, but like I was a nightmare. I was verbally abusive. It was a messy situation. And he pointed out that he was a little concerned about how much I was drinking and doing drugs. Now we met doing blow in a bathroom. So like I was like, that's crazy. You're a crazy person. You're ruining me. Like it's all your fault. And he broke up with me. And then I was sort of like, I am doing a lot of coke alone. And I also have this job at a restaurant where for the first time in a long time, there's people that actually respect me for what like they don't know about the coke and they don't know about the whole thing. And they just think I'm good at my job. And I kind of don't want to lose that. Like there's this sort of clear, healthy feeling, external validation that I actually kind of really enjoyed that I hadn't had in a really long time. I don't know that I'd ever had that, except for when someone tells me I'm good at acting. I'd never had something like that because all the external validation was coming from situations where I was getting high or drunk. So I didn't want to lose that job. I was really sort of sick and tired of feeling sick and tired from doing all the blow, and I was able to put that down. And then I was sort of like, well, maybe I'm an alcoholic. Like this could be bad. So I went to some AA meetings in person, and I was sort of like, I don't know that I love this so much. And I'm gonna go ahead and try to have one drink and see if I can just stop at that, because then that'll confirm I'm not an alcoholic. So I went to a bar and I ordered one cocktail, and I sat there all nice and neat and did my thing, and I had my drink, and I closed out the check, and I said, I'm good. And I went home and I didn't drink, and I said, I'm not an alcoholic. La 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 la. And so I continued. So I was still dry from the coke, but I was not, and I was still smoking cigarettes, but I was not drinking for like 24 hours. I managed to hold that up for a couple of days, and then I had one cocktail here and now and again, one beer now and again, turned into two beers, turned into three cocktails, turned into we're back drinking the same as we were when we were on blow. Now, when I was on blow, and I could stay up till for the next 3 days and drink consistently and not vomit. That was one thing. When I started drinking again without the dry goods, it took a little while to get that tolerance back up, but it came back quickly. So now eventually I'm able to like just drink forever and get drunk, but like not pass out and not throw up. It's just sort of like staying the same. And this is a little bit before COVID. And then COVID happens, and I don't have that job anymore because it was a restaurant. And so now I just have endless time to drink. And I knew it was going to be an issue that I had that time. Like I'm intuitive in that way, you know, like, and I knew it was going to be an issue, and I just did it anyway. And those months were terrible. It was just, I was just alone drinking all the time. And I realized, and partly because I was like trying to take some acting classes again, and I like couldn't memorize a monologue. Like my brain was just all like messed up. Like I was just so out of practice and I was so messed up. And I, you know, finally realized that like all these things that I felt like were outside of me issues were all because of the substance use. Like there was no way that I was going to have healthy relationships with my family. There's no way I was going to feel like I belonged anywhere. There was no way that I was going to be able to act again. Like I shot that shit, and now who knows if there's a future in this for me, but like if I want one, I have to stop drinking. Otherwise, I'm going to be like this until I die. Like there's, and I had this sort of realization one day after with this like horrifying hangover that I had. And I was like, oh my God, this is what my life is. And I've just been letting it happen by not removing this one aspect of it that I do deeply know is a problem. But I was scared because alcohol was like my best friend at that point. And so I put it down and I logged onto a Zoom meeting because it was COVID, and I didn't drink after that. I didn't have any withdrawals that were like scary. I don't really remember what those first couple weeks were like. Truly, I went for a lot of walks. But the thing that was really important to me as far as recovery is involved is that I found through Zoom by accident secular AA. And so I was at this meeting and it just sort of felt different than the other meetings. And I asked them about it and they were like, oh, well, this one's actually like a secular meeting. And I was like, what the fuck? Because the God thing has been like, that's been an issue for me for a long time. Because I don't just really want anything to do with religion. It's just like not part of my story. So I don't really want to introduce it to get sober. That feels crazy. And they were like, yeah, there's like secular meetings. And they sent me that list. And I logged on to the East Village Sober Agnostics meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous on Friday night. And it was so much fun. These people were just very down to earth, and the speaker was great. And that's how I met Bridget and some other people that I still talk to every single week. And it was just like, I was like, oh, this is cool. I like this. This is a good club to be in. And so I kept going, and it really was instrumental in me getting sober. And I got to do my 90-day qualification there. And I still go to that meeting in person now every week. And it just sort of felt like I could get sober in the way that I needed to find myself again, which was important. And I act now, like I actually do, like I'm actually a working actor, and I have a good relationship with my dad, and I know my moral, like I'm so back with my moral compass. Like I know when my instinct is telling me like you shouldn't do that, or like this is the right move, you know, I'm back in there with that. And it, and I want people to like me. I don't need people to like me. I don't, you know, I don't need to have a good time as far as like going out and staying up. Like I feel pretty self contained and like aware of what I need. And I don't know that that would be, I don't know if that would, what that would be like if I hadn't found these rooms, and especially the secular free thinking crowd. To I think it's really important to allow people to be, to just allow people to be themselves. Like I think we all just like in the world, we all just need to take a big fucking chill pill and just like let people do their thing. And like this is a way that we can do that. And I can go into a regular AA room now and not totally freak out when I hear the word God, but it's because I've had almost 5 years of practice working on myself and meeting other alcoholics and being in these kinds of environments to allow myself to ease into that. And I think also allowing people to do things on their own schedule is totally fine. I don't mind that it's taken me 5 years to do this. I don't mind that I haven't fully done the steps and that I still want to, because I've got my whole life to be sober. And like, sometimes I do need a day at a time. Sometimes I do have to play the tape forward. Sometimes I do have to do those things. But mostly I just need to show up to the people that I care about. Many of them I've met in these meetings. I need to show up for them. I need to show up for myself. And those are skills that I've learned in these communities. So thank you so much, Bridget, for letting me speak this morning, and hope everyone's off to a good day.